You're listening to Freed on Business. To talk to Jim and his guests, call 305-541-2350. That's 305-541-2350. Now, back to your host, Jim Freed.
All right, I want to thank everybody. We're at our 500th show. We've been on for 10 years. Later on in the show, Wanda and I are going to reflect on some of our favorite moments. So I want to thank everybody here at the Ball and Chain for hosting us. I want to thank the folks at CBRE. CBRE has started the CBRE Edge. The Edge by CBRE, it's a monthly segment led by Arden Carson, South Florida's market leader. She's a thought leader in the business community down here. We'll be talking to real people, delivering a real advantage across various industries in South Florida. Today, we're going to be speaking with CBRE Spencer Levy, the chairman of the Americas Research and senior economic advisor. CBRE just published their Southeast Outlook report earlier this week, and Spencer tells me it's sunny outlook in Southeast United States and especially in South Florida. Welcome back, Spencer.
Thank you very much.
How do you like the way I got all that in there?
You forgot to mention where we are.
Oh, wait, I did not. I said we're here at the Ball and Chain.
500? Did you mention that?
I mentioned it's the 500 show. Wanda, what else did I forget?
It was so fast. I didn't get it all. I just want everyone to know that we're here and they can come see us.
We are here live at the Ball and Chain. You can come see us.
Continue.
Wanda has something else she wants to tell us.
Oh, yes. If you'd like to stop by and say happy birthday or happy anniversary, Jim, or something to that effect, we have tickets to next week's North American Bitcoin Conference. It's going on Wednesday through Friday. Great experience if you're into the cryptocurrency thing. You can check it all out, and it's going to be at James L. Knight Center. Come here. And the password is POLO.
That's right. Password is POLO, and we're having great tapas. I want to thank our friends at Ball and Chain, especially Bill Fuller and the rest
of the
team here. George has fixed us up a smoking great Jim Free drink here. We're going to have a great time. It's like a rum and a Tom Collins kind of thing. I don't know, but I'm already really ready to try it out. But here we're back with Spencer. So, Spencer, you told me it's sunny in the Southeast. When can we expect it to get partly cloudy?
Well, the joke I say is that for the last 5 years, I've been suggesting that the next recession is 2 years away. And so I'm sticking to my guns, and we just redid our forecast, and the next recession or slowdown is about 2 years away. And why does it keep getting pushed out? It keeps getting pushed out because we've had fiscal stimulus that we did not anticipate in the form of the tax plan. Investor and business and consumer confidence has stayed extremely high. We've seen a uptick in manufacturing, which is something that many people thought was old news in the United States. And so we are doing much better than we had anticipated. And we're doing that in a relatively low inflation environment, including consumer goods, but also wages, though we are seeing wages beginning to tick up. So the long story short is this. We think we can keep rolling for about another 2 years, so long as we don't see an event that we don't anticipate. The one event that people are pointing to, or the two events, are the Fed potentially raising rates too quickly and the potential for a protracted and destructive trade war between the U.S. and China. I don't believe either of those events are going to occur, but if they did occur, my forecast would be more pessimistic.
Oh, okay, fair enough. I think that's a great way to take a look, and I kind of actually agree with you. Now we've had, you know, I was on the phone today with my investment manager, and I said, hey, maybe we should buy some more CDs. He said, that's last year's strategy. He said, this year inflation is down. But, I mean, he said, this year interest rates are going down again. I said, wait a minute, what? Tell me a little bit about that without a lot of whole yield curve inflection and all that other stuff in there.
I'll keep the fancy words out, and I'll just go like this. We've been predicting that the 10-year Treasury is going to be going up for the last several years, and it did, and now it's collapsed again. It's down by 50 basis points in the last 2 months or so, from about 3.2 to about 2.7 where it is today, which surprised all of us. And a lot of people think, well, that's good news, right? Well, it's really mixed, because the 10-year Treasury and the cost of debt isn't just a cost of capital. While yes, it is good in terms of helping you get a home loan, in terms of an auto loan, student loans, it's not good in terms of people's outlook for growth, because the cost of debt isn't just a cost of capital. It is also the single best indicator of optimism or pessimism about growth. So because the Treasury collapsed by 50 basis points, it really said that people got materially more pessimistic about growth. So I actually hope interest rates creep up again. And in fact, our house model does predict the interest rates will creep back above 3% before the end of this year once again.
So then the reason that the interest rates were collapsing because there would be a less demand for money?
No, it's because people were scared. The Treasury is known as the risk-free security, and if people are scared, they're going to buy bonds, and so that drove down yields.
Okay, thank you. I just needed that extra leg on the issue there. And then, so with everything having a full price in it at the top of the market cycle, where we appear to be at right now, and where we've been at for quite a while, it seems that that would continue to exacerbate pricing pressure. Do you think that there's anything that still has a little bit of value? Where would somebody go to be a value investor in real estate right now?
Well, I still think there's plenty of value in real estate, and this could be found in a whole host of markets. Now, let me be clear about one thing. When people ask me where they should buy or what they should buy, I don't say go to Miami or Nashville or New York. I say, what is your cost of capital? What's your time horizon? Because if you have a family office and you have long-term patient capital, my answer is going to be very different for that person than it is for the opportunistic investor that needs to flip in 3 to 5 years. But that being said, and going right back to the beginning of this segment, the submarkets that I like the most around the country are those markets that are near these either talent generators or talent creators or places that attract that talent, talent around universities or live-work-play environments where you're getting this confluence of people and companies are coming in. They're going into new city areas of old cities that are able to attract and retain talent. And many of these are still evolving. They're gentrifying, and many of them are in what's known as opportunity zones. And there are many opportunity zones in Florida where they're, in addition to being some of these hip, cool, young, emerging areas, they also have a brand new tax incentive which just came into play from the government in the 2017 tax plan. So I think there's great value to be had in those areas for just about any type of capital, but certainly more patient capital could still buy core assets in great markets and do well over the long term.
Now, I've seen a whole bunch of these opportunity zone funds, but are the regulations fully formed on this stuff yet?
Well, I had a call today with the Real Estate Roundtable and others to talk about just that, and they are the industry group that works with the commercial real estate industry to try to refine the regulations. So the short answer is no, they are not fully formed yet, but they are formed enough that we see over $10 billion of money chasing it already, and that number could increase. Because the rules are clear enough that if you buy into one of these opportunity zones through a qualified vehicle, you could not only defer taxes during the first 10 years of your investment, you could avoid gains taxes altogether if you hold longer than that. So the tax incentive to get into this zone is real. It's now. And there's a window. So notwithstanding the fact it's not fully baked, the money is there and it's going in.
Oh, well, that's great. And then, you know, one last question. We only got a couple more minutes left. Yeah, water would be great. Something like that. Okay. Oh, my God. They're going to have the Freed on Fire. Bill's bringing the Freed on Fire. So the second half of the show is going to get a little more fun. But this has been great. You know, Spence, I just want to ask you one last question. You live in Baltimore. We've seen it on TV. You travel a whole lot. Other than Baltimore and Miami, what's your favorite city? You don't have to say Miami, but it'd be nice. And then we want to know what your favorite part of Miami is. And you could say the ball of chain, that'd be okay.
Well, my favorite city in the world is London. And I like London for many reasons why I like Miami. I like it because it is the most diverse city in the world, has a great business community, has a great diverse community, has great food. It's just a wonderful city to go to. So I would say London is my favorite place, Miami. But I come to Miami all the time. And I'm going down. I was in Key Biscayne in March. I'm coming back to Key Biscayne this March. I'm heading down to Key West because Miami is not just for business. It's also cool. I like going to some of the Little Havana communities because I love Cuban food. I like that element to the city. It feels international, and it is it's a lot of fun. And you know, if I did have my last meal on this planet, it probably would be at Joe's Stone Crabs in Miami where I ate 2 weeks ago. But I would tell you that Miami has all the elements of London. It just needs to attract a little bit more money so it can continue to grow. So a wonderful city, and I'm a huge fan.